live from Cap Radio in Sacramento. This is Insight. I'm your host, Randall White. And did you have a tough time sleeping last night? If your experience was anything like those of us here on the Insight crew, you did. Heavy rain and extreme winds knocked down trees and power lines throughout the region. And while the weather is starting to calm a bit, there is more on the way. The Sierra experienced blizzard conditions overnight, with some gusts topping 120 miles an hour. Navigating the roads is like an obstacle course, so give yourself extra time to get where you are going this morning, or just if you can, stay home. Power outages are the norm this morning in Northern California. We realize that some of you might be listening to Cap Radio right now because the battery-powered radio is the only source of info you might have. Street lights are out in many parts of our listening area, and power crews have been dispatched to restore service to well over 100,000 customers. We begin our coverage this morning with an update on the power situation, starting with Chris Capra. He's a spokesperson with SMUD. Chris, nice to speak with you again.
Yeah, good morning, Randall. Thanks for having me.
You live in the foothills, right? Everything okay at your home?
Yep, everything's okay, and for now. And Sacramento is improving as well. Sacramento County, which SMUD serves, saw about 156,000 customers out at about 4 o'clock this morning.
That was the peak.
That was the peak. And in the intervening 5 hours or so, we've reduced that number to about 70,000 customers out. So we've been able to get some work done.
Cut it in half, just about.
Yeah. And the key here was that as the storm came in last night and outages began to occur, our crews were able to restore power and do some work. But then the winds started to pick up into the 25-30 mile an hour a sustained range, and then gusting into the 50s and low 60s, that makes it impossible for our crews to get up in bucket trucks and do the work above ground. About a little less than half of our service territory is above ground, so poles and wires. So they couldn't do that work overnight. We had some ground-based crews that were able to do some what we call make-safe work. That's work that involves tending to down power lines and possibly arcing power lines and other equipment that are public safety hazards. We were able to get to a lot of those early this morning. And then as the wind started to come down this morning, able to assess what we have out there and get crews out there to do the heavier duty work. And they've been able to make significant progress. Those workers are brave and valuable, I'll tell you that.
That's for sure. SMUD's coverage area is Sacramento County and some adjoining areas?
Yeah, there's a little bit of Old Roseville just north of the Sacramento County line in Placer County that we serve from an old circuit that was still connected to us when we went ahead and became a utility back in 1946. So a little bit of that in Placer County as well. But right now we're looking at prioritizing our restoration efforts, those that being get to the public safety hazards first, like I mentioned, and then to the larger swaths of customers that are affected, those in the five-digit range. And we have a few of those that we're working on this morning that are pretty large. Then we start to get into the smaller outages as the day progresses. A good thing that we have going for us, and most if not all electric utilities have now, are smart meters. And you know, years ago we'd have a storm like this. For example, in 2008 we had a very large storm like this that knocked out power to significant numbers like it did last night, and it took a couple of days to get people back restored because some of those outages were embedded within other outages. So the crew would go restore power, think they got everybody, and then maybe there were a few stragglers that weren't, who had to call back in and then have a crew come back out and do the work. Now we're able to ping those meters and get a more accurate indication where the outages are, pinpoint them, and then when we leave a neighborhood or an area, we're confident that we restored everybody.
You think the remaining 70 plus thousand should be restored by the end of the day?
We're hopeful that we're able to get as many on as possible today, and if not early tomorrow, but our goal is to work as quickly and safely as possible.
Yeah, finally, Chris, the hotspots, you mentioned there's some five-digit areas, meaning in the, above 10,000 people without power. Where are those?
There's some in Carmichael and Arden. But if I were to go through that list right now, I'd take up all of your time.
Right.
So the best way to look at it is to look at our outage map and at smud.org/outages. You'll be able to see those big bubbles that show where the larger concentrations of customers are. And they are scattered throughout our service territory today.
Yeah. Chris Capra, spokesperson for SMUD. Good luck through the rest of the day. Thank you for the info.
Thanks, Randall. And appreciate it. You have a good day, too.
Nice speaking with you again. All right. Joining us now is Megan McFarland. She's a spokesperson for PG&E. And thank you as well for updating us all.
Thank you for having me. So this storm has just been a really big one.
Yeah.
Across our service area, we have 235,000 customers without power as of 5:30 this morning. In the outlying areas of Sacramento, it's 55,000 customers. Some of the big outages are Davis, 9,000, Rio Vista, 2,000, Woodland, 10,000. So using our storm outage prediction model, we were able to see where the storm was going to hit the hardest, so that we were able to pre-stage crews and equipment and resources in those locations. So as soon as the weather clears and our crews are able to get out there, we're going to be out there assessing, making repairs, and getting the power back on safely and as quickly as possible.
I saw you nodding when Chris mentioned around 4 a.m. there was a peak. Was that about the same for PG&E?
I'm not sure about our exact times, but I know that they're constantly assessing like where they can get out there first and make repairs when it's safe.
Megan, PG&E is the nation's largest utility with a coverage area far larger than SMUD's, extending into some really rural areas of the Cap Radio listening footprint. I imagine some of those areas are hard to get to with downed trees strewn about and that sort of thing.
Yes, that's exactly it. Some of the areas are more rural, more remote. There's access issues. There's trees that come down in roads. So those areas tend to take a little bit longer to get the power back on. So we always want our customers to be prepared when they see a storm coming, start preparing to have a potential outage.
And what is PG&E's how does PG&E prioritize which power gets restored when?
It's all based on safety. You know, we just look at all the different areas, and the areas that are safe to make repairs, we start right away. And like I said, with that storm outage prediction model, we're able to know where in our area is going to get hit really hard so that we're ready to make repairs there.
And the estimate for getting those 200,000+ customers back online?
We're working on it. It all depends on safety and when we can get out there and make those repairs.
Yeah. All right. Well, Megan McFarland, thank you so much. We appreciate your update as well.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good luck with everything throughout the day. So the winds are dying down, but more rain is on the way for days to come. So let's get an update now from Michelle Mead, meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service here in Sacramento. And Michelle, I wasn't here yesterday, but you were on Insight, and you warned us about the weather. How did your predictions hold up?
Remarkably well. In fact, some of the gusts were even stronger than we thought they could be, which, you know, we did warn folks that gusts to 60 or 65 miles an hour along the front, that 2 to 4 a.m. time frame that both Chris and PG&E mentioned was with the frontal passage. So we definitely saw that. Our higher terrain up in the Sierra actually recorded gusts over 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
Which is, you know, pretty standard up there. They definitely see winds of that nature. But, you know, the road closures and the power outages started basically from north to south from about 9 o'clock last night through this morning, and it continues. So like everyone mentioned, safety is everyone's top priority. We do have a lot of rain and snow out there still. And you probably noticed we extended the high wind warning through 8 a.m. And so the gusts that we saw to 60 have definitely quieted down, but it's still going to be a breezy day. So folks really need to be diligent about making sure that if you don't have to go out today, today's a good day to just stay in.
Yeah, right. Michelle, would it be accurate to say that the winds we experienced over the last 12 hours were in the hurricane force range?
So hurricane force is 75 miles an hour. So we definitely had some locations flirt with that. The mountains especially saw the hurricane force. But down in the foothills and the valley here, you know, when you get gusts to 60, 65 miles an hour, you can't stand up in it, but it's not technically a hurricane force until we hit 75. But that being said, I woke up to one of our chairs in the pool, and we had stuff flying around, and I knew it was coming, and we thought we had it tucked away far enough to not be impacted, but even we were wrong.
Yeah, we did a lot of that preventative stuff at home too, and I still found things that were out of place, just like you. In terms of rainfall, a lot of people were looking to this storm to bring as much as a foot of rain in some areas, like the Santa Cruz Mountains and the Central Coast. What are we looking for? Or what have we seen thus far? And then what do you still expect moving forward?
So, like I mentioned with the band, we did have some urban flooding. We had a urban flood advisory out in the middle of the night to account for that. Luckily, the burn scars in the Central Valley here skirted it. We did not see the rain rates, so we did not issue any flash flood debris flows. That being said, we are hearing reports trickle in from Caltrans and other partners that there were, you know, some mud movement or rock slides, but safety is top priority. So until we can actually get, you know, somebody out there to show us some pictures, we can't verify. The Bay Area did end up issuing a couple of flash flood debris flow warnings overnight with that front. And the front has stalled, so it is sitting over the Santa Cruz Mountains right now, and it's going to continue to feed a pretty steady band of rain and then, of course, snow in the Sierra all day today. Mm. So folks in the southern Sacramento and the San Joaquin Valley are definitely should be on the lookout for small creeks and streams. And then, like I mentioned on yesterday's call, any of those low water crossings or underpasses, those that are typically issues with heavy rain events, but I know Caltrans, they've got crews everywhere, same with all the utilities. So everyone's out there, but safety takes precedence. We want to make sure we keep all those workers safe as well.
This is a bit of the storm door is open situation. How does it look in terms of helping us skirt a drought this year?
Like I mentioned yesterday, we need 5 to 7 of these storms to be a typical winter, and this is our first one. Not to say all hope is lost. We've had fabulous Februarys or miracle Marches. You've heard all of that coming. You know, she asked me yesterday, what does it look like for the storm door? And it looks like we are good through about Monday and Tuesday of next week. And then La Nina is going to take over once again, and our ridge is going to come back and dry us out. So for mitigation purposes, it's actually a good thing, you know, that we'll have some time to clean up, but we're definitely still in need of moisture. This storm is definitely packing a punch. I know at my house, we had over an inch of rain overnight, and I live in Roseville. So it was quite a soaker. And like I mentioned, we did have some urban impacts overnight from, you know, ponding of water. So the ground is definitely wet because we did get so much. And it's going to continue at least through Thursday, and then everything will transition to the mountains Friday and Saturday for scattered showers, and then it'll be nice in the valley. But we do have another system coming in Sunday night through early Tuesday. So,
and we are getting some of that important money in the bank up in the Sierra, right?
Yes, and the snow levels were very low. In fact, Redding reported 2 inches in the town of Redding. On the north side of town, they got upwards of 6 inches. So yeah, it's been quite an event.
Wow. Michelle Mead, meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service here in Sacramento. Thank you so much. I know you're going to be busy the next few days with these sorts of things and also just updating the situation. So we appreciate your time very much.
Yep. Happy to help.
Michelle Mead, meteorologist in charge, friend of Cap Radio's. We love having her on. Okay, we do have Cap Radio reporters out in the field right now surveying overnight damage. And joining us is Cap Radio's news editor, Chris Hooks. Chris, are you on the line?
I am. Hey, Randall. How's it going?
Yeah, good. Great to speak with you. Also joining us is Cap Radio's environment reporter, Ezra David Romero. Ezra, how are you?
I'm well.
So, Ezra, I want to start with you only because I saw a picture that you posted on Twitter where a tree had, in the words of the woman who was standing there, sliced through a house like butter. The house happened to be painted yellow, so that was a really good analogy. Where was that taken?
Yeah, just, you know, I woke up this morning around 7:30 and saw messages like, go out and do some reporting. And I went out, you know, a few blocks away in Alkali Flats, downtown Sacramento area. And that's just, yeah, the downtown Alkali Mansion Flats type area. And I saw this house, you know, where a giant limb of a tree fell and literally sliced a piece of the house off. Mm. I guess it happened around 11:30 last night. I talked to a man and he said he heard the crash and he went outside and that's how the house looked. It looked like it cut through a whole entire bathroom off the house. And he called the police and that family is no longer there. But the damage all around the Alkali Mansion Flats area of downtown Midtown Sacramento is pretty damaged in a lot of places. Mm.
Nobody hurt in that incident?
I'm unsure, to be honest.
We certainly hope not. What else have you seen? A lot of branches in roadways and that sort of thing?
Yeah, so I've driven around downtown Midtown Sacramento in front of the Bombay Indian restaurant.
Yeah.
Their outdoor dining center has been smashed by a tree and power lines.
Oh.
They have it all cordoned off. I mean, so the outdoor dining has taken hit. I also talked to the regional manager for IHOP in the region. We were talking on the phone a few minutes ago, and he said six of his restaurants from Sacramento to Rockland, their outdoor dining spaces are either gone, they blew away, or are severely damaged. So he had a message to Gavin Newsom saying, let's go to the next tier so we can have indoor dining again.
Yeah, that Bombay outdoor dining was just put in not that long ago. Like, that was constructed specifically for the pandemic.
Yeah, I remember that when it went up, you know, it's kind of a raised seating, and then a lot of restaurants have that, you know, where the normal grass or trees go on the sidewalk, they've turned that into walkable to places to eat.
Wow. Well, Ezra, thank you. Hang on the line for just a moment here. Chris Hooks, news editor, let's bring you in. What are you seeing? What parts of town are you surveying?
So I went out shortly before 7 this morning, and I live south of Broadway. So hitting Broadway, you see it's kind of backed up there just because at the moment, at the time, I should say, 25 railroad crossing arms were down because power was out. So police were having to divert cars to go different ways. Regional transit was down at the time. So I was over there, and then obviously I came to downtown and midtown areas as well to see if I could talk to some folks to sort of survey some of the damage. To Ezra's point, Bombay's outside dining was damaged. There were also two power lines that were down right there, which is probably why a lot of the power and street lights are down in downtown and midtown.
Yeah.
Zelda's Pizza right down the street just barely missed being knocked out by a fallen tree as well. So other than that, it's sort of surprising how little damage is done to some of the outside dining structures. To some of the restaurants, I was expecting to see much more damage, but obviously there's a lot. But it does appear that some of these businesses were able to, I guess, have some structures that were good enough to hold up.
Yeah. Chris or Ezra, I'm seeing a tweet from Joe Smith with Loaves and Fishes. He says he's getting calls and messages that tents and encampments are getting destroyed, and then says this is a disaster. Have you seen anything along the lines of shelters for people who are homeless?
I have not seen them yet, but we're going to do some reporting on that later. But sorry, Chris, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I was going to say I'm actually just outside City Hall right now near Cesar Chavez Plaza. And there are some tents and homeless encampments that have, I mean, you see people now sort of picking up their things that have blown away. I actually spoke to one unhoused man who just told me his name was Bernie, just maybe a 5 minutes before I got on the phone with you guys. And I mean, he sort of had the same message to anyone else. He was able to get shelter last night, but he said if he wasn't able to get that shelter, he would have looked for the nearest parking garage to be able to sleep in. And his message to everyone was, I mean, voters have the power, and people in power need to use his words, walk the talk.
Yeah. Mayor Steinberg expressed anger last night that the shelters weren't opened. So Chris Hooks is Cap Radio's news editor. I'll let you get back to surveying the area. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Randall.
Also, Cap Radio's environment reporter, Ezra David Romero. We appreciate your reporting, and people should definitely check out your Twitter feed, which we've retweeted so they can find it easily. Thank you, Ezra.
Thanks for doing that.
All right, up next, one of every eight U.S. residents is a Californian, a state which has grown tremendously over the past century and a half. But that growth is slowing as many are now choosing to leave the state, including some of the state's high-profile, high-tech businesses. Just ahead, we'll dig into the trend a bit to find out what's behind it and what we can expect moving forward. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Randall White.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. And for continued storm updates, please check out the Cap Radio website at capradio.org or our Facebook and Twitter feeds. You'll get a lot of information there. But we are going to shift gears now on Insight this morning. California is affectionately known as the Golden State, right? We're the land of sun, surf, snow, rolling hills, and majestic forests. Also, let's not forget fine wine and golden opportunities encapsulated by the 1924 Al Jolson song, California, Here I Come. Here's a little bit.
California, here I come, right back where I started from, where bowers of flowers bloom in the spring. Each morning, at dawning, birdies sing, and everything, a sun-kissed misshead.
I wish you could see through the Insight studio glass where I'm looking at Antonio and Cynthia doing a little jig to the song just on the other side there. So the gold rush of 1849 opened the floodgates to the West, a new frontier of hope, opportunity, growth. Now, fast forward to today, and California has the largest economy in the United States by a lot and is the fifth largest in the world, ahead of India and behind Germany. So why are so many people now choosing to ignore the California dream? Perhaps the lifestyle. You may have seen news from U-Haul. While not scientific, it does paint a picture of what's going on here. According to U-Haul data, and these are one-way rentals of their trucks, California leads the country in the rate of people leaving one way out of town. Drilling down deeper, the company says San Francisco is the epicenter of California's exodus, accounting for 58% of U-Haul's California outbound traffic, so well over half. So where are people moving to? Well, U-Haul says Tennessee is the top destination, but there's also a lot of traffic heading to other western states like Nevada, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. Texas is also high on the list. And it's not only people, businesses are leaving too. You may have heard that HP, Oracle, and Tesla all announced last year they will move their headquarters out of state. We're going to discuss the economic impact of all of this in just a minute with Sac State Professor of Finance Sanjay Varshney. But first, we want to welcome Hans Johnson. He's the senior fellow with the Public Policy Institute of California. He's also a demographer for the California Research Bureau and the California Department of Finance. Hans, great to have you with us this morning.
Great to be here, Randall. And to be clear, I used to work at the California Research Bureau and the Department of Finance before I came to the Public Policy Institute of California, but I don't work there anymore. There's great people working there, but not me.
Right. Well, good to know. But you've got the history of it all in your head.
I do have the history of it all, and I keep in touch with those folks.
Yeah, so that's important. So from a statewide perspective, what does the latest research show on California's population decline?
And I loved your intro, and it points to a period of time when California really was booming. And I think what many people don't realize is that that period was actually quite a few decades ago now. So it's been a while that we have had slowing population growth, several decades. And so this trend, this latest trend, which is population growth seems to have practically stopped altogether in California. Over half the counties in the state lost population in the last year, according to the official estimates from the good folks at the Department of Finance. That's a continuation of a longstanding trend. But that kind of, you know, sea change from being a place that's growing to a place that's not growing is a big deal. And of course, it goes to the kind of not only economic implications, but kind of the psyche of what California is and what it represents nationally. Most people who are leaving are going to surrounding Western states and Texas. And at the same time that we have more people, far more people leaving than coming in from other states, we still have a net positive flow of young college graduates to California. And I think that also is indicative of why people move and where California still seems to have some attraction to at least some people. And let me finally note that, you know, the official estimates that are produced end in July 1st, 2020, most of the COVID deaths in California have occurred since then. And I suspect that almost certainly, you know, and we're talking about almost 40,000 people now in our state who have died of COVID, that will also be a factor going forward and could tip the entire state into negative population growth territory.
Hans, I'm going to have you hold your microphone just slightly away from your shirt and your face so it doesn't rub at all. I appreciate that. So from your research, can you tell us the top three reasons why people are choosing to leave California? And we can spend some time exploring each one of those.
Right. And so, you know, people move for many different reasons. The current population survey, an official survey of the United States government, does ask people to list the top reason. And invariably, the main reason people move to and from California is economic, jobs specifically. The second reason, and one that's especially predominant among those leaving the state, is housing. That won't come as a surprise to anybody who lives here. And then the third largest reason is because of family. And in fact, when we look at who's leaving the state, it's more likely to be people who were born elsewhere in some other state, came to California for a while, and now are returning.
Yeah. Rural areas are also taking a hit population-wise. Can you talk about some of the reasons why and why those areas are different than the urban areas?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It's really a tale of two states in California. We have urban areas like the Bay Area that you alluded to that, and I hesitate to be overly dramatic, but in some ways that are strangling on their own success, that have had just tremendous economic opportunities, which has driven up housing costs to unforeseen levels, certainly compared to historic numbers, but even compared to the rest of the United States. So the San Francisco Bay Area is the most expensive metropolitan area to live in from a housing perspective in the entire United States. So at the same time that we see that, we see San Diego, Los Angeles, and actually Sacramento now is the leading large metropolitan area in terms of population growth over the last couple of years. The numbers aren't big, but when everybody else is not doing much change at all, it means
Sacramento remarkable,
ends
right?
up yeah. taking the lead. Yeah, so that's notable. And so that's kind of one story, which is the metropolitan urban California. The other story is rural California. And I would say in that area, we've seen population declines for some time in many of those counties. And that's about economics. It's about lack of job opportunities, young people moving away because there aren't sufficient jobs for them, and a very old age structure. So relatively a lot of deaths compared to births in those counties. In metropolitan California, people are leaving for housing, or in Sacramento's case, and especially that Bay Area to Sacramento flow, people coming into Sacramento for relatively affordable housing, believe it or not, as expensive as Sacramento has become.
Yeah. So Sacramento is seeing some of the benefit from those. As we mentioned, the one-way U-Hauls out of Sacramento, out of San Francisco, some of them are stopping here.
Yes. And in fact, probably a very large share of them are stopping there. When we look at interstate flows, the Bay Area actually isn't leading the exodus of the state. It's actually Los Angeles that is.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the reasons people are moving to the greater Sacramento region?
Well, certainly housing is one, again. Economic opportunities, which include jobs, are number two. And number three is family. I would say, you know, and the jury is still out, and by the jury, I mean the good data that we rely on to look at what's happening in our state is still to be uncovered for this pandemic and then eventually the post-pandemic period. But the other item that we're hearing a lot about, and I know you're going to be talking about this later, is the ability to work remotely and what that means for places like Sacramento. So I suspect that not a small number of people who are coming to Sacramento are still working in the Bay Area. And in fact, for a while, people, and there has been increasing commuting even from Sacramento to the Bay Area, certainly from the northern San Joaquin Valley, places like Tracy to the Bay Area. That's not new at all. If you look at the Altamont Pass in the morning, but even I-80 going towards San Francisco, that in the morning used to have a lot more people coming in than going out.
Yeah.
The question now is, with remote working an increasing possibility, and in some cases even maybe permanent remote working, does that lead more people to move from the Bay Area to Sacramento? And I think the answer is almost certainly yes. It's just the question is, what's the magnitude of that? We don't know yet.
Hans, you mentioned the higher educated adults or students with degrees moving into the state. And I know I've seen data over the last year or so that showed an influx into California. The people that are choosing to move here are in higher income brackets, and many of the people that are choosing to leave are in lower income brackets. What does that trend mean overall for the state?
Well, in some ways, you know, it's encouraging. In other ways, it's discouraging. So it's encouraging, you know, from a purely economic standpoint, to be gaining young college graduates to meet labor market demand in our state. And those college graduates, and we've done a lot of work on this at PPIC, do very well on average economically in California. So in that respect, it's a good thing. You know, that means more tax revenue for the state, tends to mean less demand for expensive state services, social services. So that's good. The flip side of that is that I think any of us, whether you're a parent or not, but you want a place where young adults in California can be able to find a place for themselves in our state, whether or not they have that college degree, and not require a really high income to be able to live here. And so, again, it comes back to, you know, housing. You know, realtors like to say it's all location, location, location in terms of these migration flows. As I've said, jobs and family are very important, but I don't think we can understate the problem that we have with respect to housing. And let me just add this too, Randall. It's what makes, you know, I love being a demographer in California. It's just a fascinating place for so many reasons. I think it's the most fascinating place in the world, with a mix of people from all over the world living in California. What sets us apart from other slow-growing states now, and we are that for sure, we are a slow-growing state and have been for some time now, is that unlike the Rust Belt states, many of the upper Midwest states, we don't have, you know, large swaths of empty housing. You know, it's, some cities, Detroit, for example, can't tear down unoccupied vacant housing fast enough. That's not our story at all. So we're a very different kind of slow-growing state than what we've seen historically in the United States.
Hans, finally, in just 20 seconds or so, moving forward, do you see that trend topping out, which it sounds like it already is, in terms of California's growth and starting to decline, where we actually lose aggregate numbers of people in the course of a year?
I think that's a real possibility. And let me just be the demographer here for a minute, because it's not all about just intrastate domestic migration. We've also had a substantial decline in international migration, both to the United States and California. And just like the rest of the country, our population is aging. So we've had deaths have been going up simply because of aging. And then you put COVID on top of that, and it makes those numbers even larger. And then finally, births have been declining a lot. And we should do another show on how people, you know, what's happening with people deciding how big their families are, whether they're even going to have a family. But the number of births in California has declined quite a bit. So when you put all of that together, these trends don't tend to, you know, turn on a dime overnight. And so I suspect that all signs are, at least right now, that very slow population growth and even population decline are in our future.
Hans Johnson, senior fellow with the Public Policy Institute of California. Like you, Hans, I find this information incredibly interesting. The state of California, its people, and the trends. Love to have you back sometime soon to get deeper into one of those topics. Thank you.
I'd love to do it. Thanks so much.
Sanjay Varshney is a professor of finance at Sacramento State University and a friend of the show. We like hearing Professor Varshney's perspective on economic trends affecting the state, including the exodus we just talked about. Professor, always great to have you here. Thanks for being with us.
Sure. My pleasure. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. So you've heard the data and some of the reasons why people are leaving California. As an economics expert, what impact do you foresee this having on the state's economy, both short and long term?
So I have been actually writing about this for the last 15 years, because if you've been following our economic commentary, the Sacramento Business Review is the publication we put out twice a year. So these trends have been in place for a long time. You know, we've been talking about how businesses have been leaving California, and eventually people are going to leave California, because if you're not able to feed a family of four, you know, you are going to go elsewhere. So these trends are not new. I think what's happening to California right now, in a way, is happening to United States in general. And it's already happened to places like New York and Michigan. So the eventual decline is going to be basically something that's going to happen. And I think it'll be too late by the time we discover the broader trends, because most people don't pay attention to the broader trends. They just look at the state of the moment. And if it's great, they just move on.
How big of a hit would you say the loss of Tesla, HP, Oracle, and others are leaving, at least their headquarters, leaving the state?
It's a huge hit. So, you know, the previous speaker was talking about poor people leaving the state. Actually, that's not true anymore. You not only see poor people leaving the state because they cannot find opportunities, or they cannot basically feed their family, or they cannot afford housing. We also see rich people leaving now. So for the last several years, and like I said, you know, I've been writing about this, but it's been dismissed again and again by most politicians and legislators. The last time we saw mass exodus of people from California was in 2008, 2009, when a lot of people left for Idaho and they left for Nevada. Reno has been a huge beneficiary in Nevada from California's declines. You know, we all dismissed it. You know, at that time, if you go back and look at the comments made by the legislators, they basically were telling companies not to basically let the door hit them on the way out. So it's not something new that our business climate has been extremely unfriendly for the longest time. You know, companies find it very hard to do business here. The elites, the super elites, you know, who have a lot of money in the Bay Area, for example, and in Los Angeles, they basically didn't care because they were so rich. You know, they didn't have to deal with the housing issues or some of the issues, you know, regarding social programs and everything else. But I think that's changing now, because you can see, for example, the top 2% of the wealth in the state accounts for half the general fund for the budget, state budget. And for the last several years, we have seen a lot of these rich people, they won't tell you publicly, but privately, they've been basically finding residence in either Nevada or Texas or some of these states where the state income tax is basically non-existent. And what's going to happen is over broader, you know, if you over a longer period of time, if you look at what happened in New York. So, for example, the super rich that live in Manhattan, and then everybody else in New York is extremely poor. I think the same thing is basically, you know, that's where California is moving right now. We'll have some super rich who will basically choose to stay back here. And then everybody is going to be basically massively impoverished because that's exactly where we are headed right now. You look at, for example, the blackouts, you know, with PG&E. Mm. You look at, for example, California's inability to basically, you know, get the vaccines out in a timely manner. You, we are one of the slowest states right now when it comes to getting the vaccines out. We look at housing, complete mess. You know, we brag about housing in Sacramento. We are a short-term beneficiary of what's happening in the Bay Area. Or the longer trends still point in the direction where people, if they had a choice, they would leave California and go elsewhere.
Is the state too big?
Yes. So I think one of the things, you know, and this is kind of a weird way to basically analyze this, but I think just like the United States, as the population grows, just like in California, as you become too large, too successful, you become a victim of your own success because eventually you become too large to be managed effectively. And you're going to have challenges that basically will take you in the wrong direction. And right now, exactly that's where we are. We have homelessness on the rise. You know, we have mass levels of poverty. We have all these challenges that come, you know, with being a successful state. But then we have the haves and have nots. That gap is widening and becoming deeper because of the challenges. So I think you're right. We are too large to be managed.
So many Californians are proud of the state's high standards for the environment, healthcare, a number of different social issues. What can lawmakers do to maintain some of those standards, but still make it easier for people to do business and a more appealing place for, you know, people to live?
I think a couple of things. So first, I think it's a dangerous place to be when you have a one-party rule in a state. And that's where we are right now. We have groupthink. Everybody in the legislature basically thinks alike. And there's nobody basically who can provide an alternative viewpoint. And I think that's not a great place to be because, you know, I think diversity of opinion and thought is a good place to be. If you look at, for example, what our legislators have done to businesses over the last 10, 15 years, the problem recognition has not been there. I mean, repeatedly, like I said, every time businesses announce that they're leaving for Texas someplace else, usually the response is good riddance. For every one company that's leaving, we are so glad we have another five companies that are willing to be here. And that's a bad response because, like I said, over a 15-year period that I've been watching the whole economic landscape, we have seen companies leave California for specific reasons. And the problem recognition is non-existent. So if you're not willing to recognize the problem, you will never even get around to fixing it. So I think the first step in the whole process should be that we should recognize the problem and admit that we are a very business unfriendly state. We are a very expensive state to live in. There's something wrong with that picture because housing should not be that expensive compared to every other state in the country. So if you don't fix these issues, I don't think we're going to ever get to the point where we'll be once again a vibrant state, the land of milk and honey, like we described California, where, you know, once upon a time, people used to basically say, hey, young man, go west, right? And that's not true anymore.
Sanjay Varshney, professor of finance at Sac State, always appreciate hearing your perspective here on Insight. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And still ahead, a year ago when the pandemic took hold, many thought the real estate market was going to implode. But here we are a year later. Rents are still rising, home prices are skyrocketing, and demand is through the roof. How long will it last? Well, we'll have a look at the real estate market in the middle of the pandemic. That is coming up next here on Cap Radio. Be sure to stay with Cap Radio and on the Cap Radio app for the latest on the storm. We're constantly updating the latest power outages and damage in our area. Welcome back to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. And for our final segment today, we're going to look at housing in California during the pandemic. who would have known, right? I mean, rents are rising, home prices are surging, demand is high, and inventory is low. The impact COVID-19 has had on the real estate market has been a surprise to many, and the prospects for another strong year are good, if not great, especially in the Sacramento, Tahoe, and Reno regions. According to the National Association of Realtors, home prices could reach new highs in 2021, climbing almost 6%. The Trade Association also reports out of the 10 strongest home price and sales growth areas in 2021 is Sacramento, along with Charlotte, Boise, Phoenix, and Denver, just to name a few. Erin Sumpf is a local real estate expert. She is a broker associate with Coldwell Banker and studies our market. She joined us months ago here on Insight, and now we'd like to welcome her back on the show for an update. Erin, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So you told us last time that buyers, sellers, and agents were thinking the worst, but hoping for the best. How did 2020 turn out, and what does your crystal ball say for 2021?
2020 was a real shocker for me. If you'd asked me back in March what the market would have been like in 2020, I would have thought the answer would have been pretty abysmal looking. But as our stay-at-home orders lifted in mid to late spring, the market exploded, and our typical seasonal cycles that we see in our region did not play out. Normally, things get really slow.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
In the fall and winter, we did not experience that. Everything has just been gangbusters in 2020, and right now we seem to be on the same trajectory here in early 2021.
Erin, where are the hotspots? You know, prior to the pandemic, people moving in closer to the city's core, midtown, downtown, those sorts of things seem to be really hot. Is that still the case?
It is still the case, although I'm seeing more interest in the suburbs than usual. I think space, and particularly outdoor space, has become a bit of a premium. A lot of people have shifted their priorities and what they look for in a home. So they really have gone from, valuing proximity to amenities, where we would see that, you know, in the urban core, to, what's within their four walls and what's within their fence line. So backyard space is really at a premium. Pool demand is through the roof. Ask any pool builder and they're booked out probably a year right now. So people's priorities have shifted a little bit.
And are you still getting a lot of Bay Area clients?
Yeah, absolutely. I just closed a transaction last week for a buyer who works for Pinterest. Right. Yeah, there's no lack of enthusiasm for the more affordable home prices here in our region versus what you can afford in the Bay.
And are they telling you, I mean, not to share too much information from your clients, but that, they plan to commute into the Bay Area, or do they plan to do most of their work remotely?
I think most of them hope to do their work remotely. Many of them have been told that they more or less are permanently going to be working from home. Some have indicated that they may need to visit the office again when that becomes more practical. But transit options from Sacramento to the Bay Area, at least for the clients that I have who are considering needing to, you know, make their way back to the office there, seem to be pretty decent. Amtrak has Wi-Fi, so they can work right on the way into the office if need be. So those options tend to, you know, seem pretty good to a lot of those people who I've been working with.
In less than a minute, do you see this picking up as we head into the spring, and will this influx from the Bay Area continue to drive up prices?
Well, I don't know if the influx from the Bay is exactly what I would attribute the drive up in prices to, but it seems that there's no lack of enthusiasm from those buyers looking for more affordable homes here. it's not even just the purchase market, the resale home market, the new home market. Rentals here are in high demand as well. So I do see that continuing.
Mm-hmm. And it continuing in both the suburbs and downtown?
Yeah, my clients are spread throughout both fairly evenly at this point.
Yeah. Aaron Stumpf, broker associate with Coldwell Banker, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And as I mentioned just a moment ago, be sure to stay with Cap Radio through either the airwaves or the Cap Radio app or at capradio.org for the latest on the storm that moved through overnight. We are constantly updating the latest power outages and damages to our area. Lots of good information there. Thank you to our producers today, Cynthia Lopez, Kyle McKinnon, and managing editor Aram Sarkissian, digital team Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minotta, and technical director Mark Jones, engineer Antonio Muniz. And we're back tomorrow with a brand new show. I'm Randall White. Thanks for being here today. This has been Insight.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.